Daniel Ellsberg, the man behind the Pentagon Papers. He worked for the Rand Corporation, leaked the Pentagon Papers to the New York Times and the Washington Post back in the 1970s. Bill Keller thought Ellsberg and Manning were quite distinct cases, but what does the lawyer who defended the New York Times and the Pentagon Papers case before the U.S. Supreme Court think about Manning and this verdict? Legendary First Amendment lawyer Floyd Abrams joins us. Counselor, welcome to The Takeaway.
Good to be here.
You know, let's talk first about this question of motive, which came up at the trial, which will be more relevant than sentencing. There was also an issue of the troubled life of Daniel Ellsberg in trying to evaluate his motive. Do you think motive comes into question here as we move forward in thinking about government secrecy and the First Amendment?
Motive is relevant in a criminal law context in terms of the application of the First Amendment. I don't really think it should have a lot to do with it. I mean, things should either be allowed or not allowed, or more important, protected or not protected under the First Amendment. And I'm sort of reluctant to have the courts get into motive as a way of determining where and if the First Amendment applies.
Do you think there's an irony or a coincidence in the narrative of personal troubles in the case of Daniel Ellsberg? Of course, his psychiatrist's office was burglarized by the Nixon administration, which became a whole big issue itself. And, of course, the facts in the case about Bradley Manning and his troubles with his family, his troubles being gay in the military, all these sorts of things that came up in the trial. Is that narrative important at all?
It's really interesting in terms of how important it is. I mean, I think the sort of person, I say in a non-pejorative way, the sort of person who would be willing to or led to release 700,000 documents, many of them classified, you know, would more likely than not be someone who's somewhat estranged from American society, either because of mistreatment of him or an acute sense of willingness, you know, to pass a sort of judgment that most people don't even think about.
So here's the million-dollar question. Does the First Amendment protection create a sanctuary for such people who are likely maybe to pull the trigger on some questionable behavior that does result, for good or ill, in protecting Americans, extending our notion of democracy?
Well, there is likely, and I say likely because there, you know, really have been a lot of cases in this area, but likely going to be more First Amendment protection for people who act with innocent motive. That is to say, if you're really doing something to help an enemy, which was not the case here, but if that's really your motive, well, then yeah, then that's relevant on every level. Even as we sit in personal judgment, the law aside, just what do we think of the person? How do we think the person behaved? If the person behaved with the purpose of aiding a foreign country, we're more likely, I am in any event, to think more harshly of him.
Where does this put the Edward Snowden case, do you think? Where does this put a possible conspiracy case against Julian Assange himself, the founder of WikiLeaks?
I think that there's a mixed verdict here. The government has sustained a very significant defeat in trying its very expansive reading of aiding the enemy. I mean, that's a very major thing that's happened, and I think we ought to give some credit to the judge for personal bravery. You know, man, a sitting colonel. In a situation like this, under great pressure, whether or not anyone ever talked to her about it, but under great pressure, has come out in a more, civil libertarian-oriented way, or at least a way that unwilling to read this statute to cover what was done here.
And yet she said the burden of proof was low for the government. They didn't even meet that, in her opinion.
Yes, yes. And what that shows, I think, is the I don't want to say misconduct, but the level of passion of the Department of Justice in this case overcame good judgment. They never should have charged him with aiding the enemy. It was wrong to do that.
By overreaching, they create a distraction and they get away from the real issues in the case.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we can argue about what the real issues are. He's obviously guilty of some of these things.
And he confessed.
He's pled guilty
to
some of them. And you know, it'll be really interesting to see what sort of sentence she imposes, because certainly a lot of the guilty findings yesterday were so overlapping in nature, so much the same conduct again and again and again, that it would be, you know, really wrong to sentence, a life sentence for something like this.
Is there a constitutional question that we need to maybe think about changing our notion of the First Amendment to deal with the kinds of digital leaks in this classified domain that now is going to be more increasingly likely, and that data is going to be available in ways that was never envisioned by the framers?
Now, that's true. Look, we start with the notion that historically, even First Amendment lawyers didn't really argue there was a First Amendment right to leak. We've argued there was a First Amendment right to receive, to pass on, to comment on, of course, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, there's never been viewed as much of a First Amendment presence of a government employee in a position of trust and authority, et cetera, et cetera. Now, we've moved, as you say, to a situation in which, you know, Dan Ellsberg wouldn't have to go to the New York Times today. He could just get it all online.
Open a web page.
Sure.
Yeah.
And he could do it anonymously or find a way to do it anonymously. So, I mean, an enormous amount has changed. I don't think the First Amendment side has changed. It's just that the First Amendment side may be less relevant in a lot of ways. The First Amendment would come into play if they prosecute WikiLeaks or Assange. I mean, if the government were to say what you were positing a moment ago, if the government were to say, well, we're now going after Assange on an aiding and abetting charge, that would threaten every journalist who talks to people in possession of, quote, secret, unquote, information and really imperil the flow of news to the public.
And it sounds like that would be a case you would be interested in taking one way or another without prejudicing one way or another. Floyd Abrams, thanks so much for being here.
It's good to be here.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here? And maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.